and the coming one world religion. Let me just explain why I'm using this microphone. Two reasons. One, because it's here. And I just showed up and there it was, and I thought that was great. I couldn't figure out how to get the thing working, so I have to thank that gentleman there. The second reason is my throat is really, really messed up. I'm sick as a dog. I don't think it's contagious, although nobody's sitting in the front row. But you know, I'm not trying to blast you out. I'm not sure how much output I'm going to have during this talk. So this makes it a little easier for people to hear me in the back than to go with it. The Antichrist and the coming one world religion. Revelation 13 gives us a lot of information. A lot of the information that we have about the Antichrist is found in Revelation 13 and in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Now you can go throughout the book of Revelation, throughout the book of Daniel, and other passages of Scripture as well. But we're just going to key on a few things that are said there. And then I'm going to try to show you what I believe to be evidence that we could be living in the last days. Now, when it comes to end time prophecies, I believe that God made the end time prophecies so vague, okay, that every generation of Christians would believe that Jesus could possibly return in their lifetime. Because that really gives you a lot of incentive to live a godly life. Now, having said that, it also appears that Jesus made the end time prophecies so specific that that last generation would definitely know that yes, Jesus is going to return in our lifetime. Unfortunately, it's halfway through the tribulation period when that last generation will definitely know. The Antichrist will go in the temple, proclaim himself to be God, and then Jesus says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken about by the prophet Daniel, then it's time to head for the hills. So that's when you'll know for sure. Tim LaHaye, Al Lindsay, most of my professors at Liberty University, if they're correct, we won't be here to see that day. I hope they're right, because I'm a post-tribber, like the late Dr. Walter Martin, the late Francis Schaeffer, and so I do think that Christians will see the Antichrist. I hope I'm wrong. But whatever the case, that's the point that Jesus says to head to the hills is like halfway through the tribulation period. Okay? So I am not saying today we are definitely in the last days, and I'm not going to give you an hour, a day, a year of when Jesus is going to return. Okay? But I do think that, you know, how many remember, I'm dating myself now, but how do you remember those old E.F. Hutton commercials? When E.F. Hutton talks, everybody listens. Okay? Well, when God talks, E.F. Hutton listens, or ought to listen. God told us a lot about the end times. We would be, you know, to neglect them, we would neglect them to our own peril. Okay? We had better read what God has chosen to communicate to us. We'll deal a little bit with the book of Revelation, chapter 13. Throw in a few things from 2 Thessalonians, chapter 2, and talk about the Antichrist, the false prophet, and the mark of the beast. And then we'll look at some things that are occurring according to secular, you know, non-Christian journalists. And we'll see if it looks like it. Maybe we ought to, you know, make sure our houses are in order because the king, his return, could be very near. And so we learn from the book of Revelation that the first beast comes out of the sea. A little bit later we find out the second beast comes out of the land. A whole lot in the book of Revelation. It amazes me how much is obviously taught in Revelation. And you can just get an outline of the end times that is enough so that there's no way, knowing that outline, there's no way any of us should be deceived. At the same time, it is also amazing about so many of the details in the book of Revelation that all we can do is speculate, okay? So some areas I'm going to share with you what I think is some of the best speculation on the interpretation of certain symbols, but I'm not going to be dogmatic on it. And in some areas I'm not even sure. To be totally honest with you, I don't know what it means, the beast out of the sea and the beast out of the land. But the best speculation that I've heard is that the land is usually referenced to the promised land, so the second beast could be Jewish and could claim to be the Jewish Messiah. Okay? The first beast that comes out of the sea, in Revelation 17:5, the sea, the many waters, are the peoples of the nations, the Gentiles, the non-Jews. So it could be that the Antichrist is a Gentile from a Gentile nation, and the false prophet could be a Jew and claim to be the Jewish Messiah. Speculation, it's just tough to tell. But the beast has 7 heads and 10 horns, leopard, bear, lion, dragon, it seems to be all the beasts of the book of Daniel put together in one end time horrible empire, okay? But it's 7 heads and 10 horns. We know that from Revelation 17:12, the 10 horns stand for 10 kings of 10 kingdoms who in the last days give their authority to the Antichrist, okay? This is interesting because a group of globalists, where was that, 1958 or 1968 when they...
They formed in 1968 in their document.
Okay. So they were founded, the Club of Rome was founded in 1968, a group of intellectuals, or wannabe intellectuals, whatever, but they're globalists. They want a one world government. They want to have a position ruling in this one world government. And very powerful people, big names in globalist circles. And they decided that they would divide, it was 1973, when they decided they would divide the world into 10 regions. Okay? That sounds like, well, who are these guys? They don't own the planet, so no big deal. But the fact of the matter is, Europe was one of those regions, and the European Union is now a fact. One of those regions is now unified. First time Europe has been unified since the ancient Roman Empire. Okay? Also with NAFTA, North America Free Trade Association, we're finding another region is being put together. Okay? We're finding this going on all over the world. Now we have a president that's talking about possibly one currency for Mexico, the United States, and Canada, which is, what they're doing in Europe with the euro dollar. The 10 horns, it used to be end time prophecy experts used to argue that the 10 horns would be 10 nations of the revived Roman Empire of the European Union. Well, now the European Union has more than 10 nations. It appears that the 10 horns may be 10 regions spread throughout the earth. The 7 heads, that's tougher to understand. Revelation 17, verses 9 to 11, tells us that the Seven heads stand for five kings who have fallen. One now is, when John wrote, the Roman Empire was ruling, and one is yet to come. So many expositors believe, okay, the five fallen kings stand for five empires that used to reign over Israel, and they were in the past, and now the one that now is, when John wrote, was the Roman Empire, and the one that's yet to come is the revived Roman Empire of the last days. The first stage of that would be the unification of Europe, which occurred in our lifetime. But also the seven heads stand for seven hills upon the city of seven hills upon which the woman sits. And the woman is the end time false religion. Okay? Well, the city of seven hills historically has been known as Rome. Okay, so it's going to have some connection with Rome. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we move on and talk about the becoming one world religion. But I'm also open to the possibility, since one of the seven heads receives a mortal head wound, and then the world worships this person as God, and he issues the mark of the beast, or at least his right-hand man does, I'm open to the possibility that not only do you have 10 kings of these 10 regions, I think it may also be possible that you might have a seven-man committee that might oversee, like the United Nations, might oversee the world, future world government, and then the 10 heads of the 10 regions report to them. And that in the last days, one of these seven leaders receives a mortal head wound, miraculously survives, establishes himself as the sovereign. The other six heads either back him or else. The 10 kings give their authority to him, and all of a sudden, all the authority, all the power, political power on earth is vested in one man. Mikhail Gorbachev, a lot of people think he's a has-been. Mikhail Gorbachev, it appears his career is just getting jump-started. When he headed the old Soviet Union, that was peanuts compared to what he's doing now. And a lot of people disagree with him. They said, no, he's a has-been. Well, if he's a has-been, how come he's the highest-paid speaker on the planet Earth? For every half-hour talk that he gives, he receives $100,000. Okay? Obama's got some great speakers, you know, Darrell Wyland and Tom Hoyles, but the fact of the matter is, you know, Obama, God love him, wouldn't even be able to afford to have Mikhail Gorbachev come here and sneeze into a microphone. Okay? And we find this guy is rubbing shoulders with some powerful people in powerful places, i.e. the United Nations. But whatever the case, now, do I think he's the Antichrist? I don't think he is. I think he, out of all the known political figures out there, I would say he's the leading candidate. But he's a little bit boring. And it just seems to me that if Satan's going to go through all this trouble, a crown and a guy, the king of the planet, it seems to me he's going to want somebody with a lot more charisma than Gorbachev has. But whatever the case, Gorbachev is definitely one of the most powerful men on the planet Earth right now. Whatever the case, this end time, the beast, by the way, stands for the end time world government, but it also symbolizes the leader of that government. And he receives his authority from Satan, the dragon. Revelation 12:9 tells us the dragon is Satan. He has a fatal head wound that is miraculously healed. The world is astonished by this, and so the entire earth, those who do not worship the Lord Jesus, worship the Antichrist and worship Satan. Okay? I used to think when I read that passage in Revelation 13 that they wouldn't know that they were worshiping Satan. They would know that they're worshiping the Antichrist, but they wouldn't know, well, I'm not worshiping Lucifer, okay? This lovely lady, Helena Blavatsky, I mean, this is where they got the expression, it looks to kill. She was probably the evilest woman who ever lived. Maybe Jezebel might have given her a run for her money, but we're going to talk about the Theosophical Society that she founded, okay? And the Theosophical Society promotes worship of Lucifer. They believe that Christianity gave Lucifer a bad rap. And when Lucifer told man that he shall become as God, that wasn't a lie. That is the truth that sets us free. And the writings of key theosophists are very popular in New Age circles. And Helena Blavatsky's Theosophical Society led to the New Age movement, so it's the source of the New Age movement in America. And it may also be the goal of the New Age movement. The meditation room in the United Nations building would not have come about without key theosophical leaders, okay? If the United Nations has a religion, it's theosophy. It is the religion of the Helena Blavatsky, so we'll talk about that in just a few moments. The Antichrist has military superiority. No one is willing to wage war with him. We have United States State Department documents showing that it is the plan, and a plan that is being implemented right before our eyes, to disarm our country, the military of our country, and to arm up the United Nations, quote unquote, peacekeeping force. And so we're in the process of crippling the United States military while other nations throughout the world are doing the same, or at least claim to be doing the same to their militaries, while the United Nations gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Keep in mind, our Constitution says that only Congress can declare war. The last time Congress declared war, okay, was World War II. Everything after that was done under the United Nations, okay? Under its authority, either directly or indirectly. So Korea, Vietnam, Persian Gulf War, the list goes on and on. If you're going to be a United States Marine, you take the oath to defend our Constitution, but then more times than not, you're going to be sent, you know, doing the dirty work for the United Nations. And, you know, sent to Somalia to disarm people or whatever. The Antichrist will have a monopoly on the world's military hardware in the last days. We're moving in that direction right now with the United Nations. A lot of people say, United Nations, why are you talking about the United Nations? The United Nations has no teeth. Maybe the United Nations doesn't have teeth, but it has very sharp dentures. And those very sharp dentures are called the United States of America. And it saddens me. Our founding fathers, we call it treason for our leaders to send our military, our young men in the military, across the world to fight for an international body. Our founding fathers, I mean, they had the revolution to remove us from that crud that was going on in Europe. They don't want us to jump back into it. The United Nations is just another utopian dream. Every utopian dream, every attempt to find peace through the wisdom of man has always ended up in the bloodshed of millions upon millions of innocent people. Fortunately, the technology of the 21st century is probably going to be the bloodshed of billions. And so, The United Nations is nothing but a second attempt at the Tower of Babel. You can't really be consistently pro-Jesus and pro-UN. And that's not popular. It's not popular, but that's the fact that God, either Jesus is the Prince of Peace, or we don't need him, we can do it on our own. That's what the United Nations is saying. He blasphemes God, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, claims to be God, reigns over the entire world for 3.5 years, and persecutes believers. Now, if the pre-trib or mid-trib rapture are true, then they would be tribulation believers. They wouldn't be people who believe before time. If post-trib rapture is true, it might be the people in this room. The false prophet, the right-hand man, the Antichrist, he's the beast from the earth or the land. Could be Israel. I don't know. We're speculating on that. Two horns. Usually horns in scripture speak of strength. Okay? Now the ten horns spoke of 10 nations. Maybe this guy is alive not only with Israel but another nation. Maybe there's two nations involved. I don't know. We're just speculating. But he's called the Lamb, so he's like a Messiah figure, appears to be a man of peace. But in actuality, he speaks as a dragon, so he proclaims a satanic message. Okay? He forces the earth to worship the Antichrist. He's kind of the Antichrist, John the Baptist. He must increase, but I must decrease. Of course, John the Baptist did that because he worshiped Jesus. And because of his love for God. The false prophet's going to do it, probably keep himself alive. He's going to say, hey, I got a whole lot of demonic power, but this boy over here's got more than me. I'm going to take my playing cards and put them on his table. He's the man. Okay? So he forces the earth to worship the Antichrist. He performs false miracles, makes fire come down from the sky. By fools, I mean it's coming from the other side, the demonic side. There are some theologians who teach that Satan and his demons cannot perform miracles, supernatural works. But the same words in the Greek for miracles done by God are also used of the Antichrist in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. So basically, I think they are real supernatural works. But when I call them false miracles, what I mean is they're from the other side. Okay? Whatever the case, he makes an image of the Antichrist and gives life and speech to the image. You know, if I had known that passage and grew up when they invented television, it would probably take me 5 years to get a television set out of fear. It was like, wow, you know, they make an image, and then they give the image power to speak. And, I would have freaked out. But what that means today, I don't know. Sometimes I'll talk to people who are really up on computer technology and say, oh, well, it could be this and that, virtual reality. And I don't know what they're talking about. But whatever the case, somehow he makes an image of the Antichrist and uses the power to speak. And he puts to death those who refuse to worship the image of the Antichrist and institutes the mark of the beast. Now, the mark of the beast, all mankind is forced to receive a mark on the right hand or the forehead. You cannot buy or sell without the mark. And the mark is either the name of the Antichrist or the number of his name. In the Caesar Nero, if you spelled out his name in Hebrew letters, since Hebrew letters also have a numerical value, it would come out to 666, okay? So a lot of people think, well, this isn't referring to today, it's referring back there, but so that might be something. It might be a guy's name in Hebrew letters, comes out to 666. Who knows? One thing I'm against, though, is taking every guy's name and trying to figure out what his numerical value is. And most of the time, we can't figure out what that guy's name would be spelled in Hebrew, so we just take it in English and we just give everything, each number a different value, and it's like, you know, get over it. I mean, Kissinger is 666, and who else was 666? They had all these people speculating, and it's just wild speculation. I think we'd be better off just looking for key biblical signs like the rebuilding of the temple. Already the Jews became a nation in 1948. God said the second time that he gathered the Jews in the land, which started in 1948, that they'll never be uprooted again. And then he talks about the millennium, that's in Isaiah 11. So I think we've got better signs to look for than trying to figure out, is that guy the Antichrist over there? The number of the Antichrist is 666, and those who accept the mark of the beast receive eternal torment. That is found in Revelation 14, verses 9 to 11. What I want to do right now is just take a look at some signs that this could be coming down in our midst. Have here the New Republic. It's a very liberal political magazine. Okay? So these guys are not on Hal Lindsey or Tim LaHaye's mailing list. Okay? But here in the January 17, 2000 magazine, the New Republic, it says, America is surrendering its sovereignty to a world government. Hooray. And so they're saying two things. Number one, that a world government is coming down in our midst. But number two, they're saying that it's a good idea. And an article written by that same guy in that same issue, Robert Wright, called Continental Drift, the subtitle is this: World Government is Coming, Deal with It. So he has a problem with guys who are saying, yeah, the leaders of this country and of other countries are moving us towards a one world government. He has a problem with those guys, not because he thinks that they're flakes and they're conspiracy nuts and they're making up stories. He has a problem with them because they're opposed to the world government. But he agrees this stuff is coming down, and he argues in this article that why don't we stop pretending that these guys are wrong? Why not just admit that this stuff is coming down? Because after all, I think it's a good thing. By the way, Carol Quigley, his Tragedy and Hope, did huge work. He received access to the inner circles of those who are pushing us towards a one world government, and he basically got it in print and tried to get it out to as many people as possible, because he thought a one world government was a good idea. So it's not just people, it's not just Bible prophecy buffs that are talking about this. This stuff is, I mean, if you don't believe a one world government is coming down, watch CNN for a day and take notes. And then you come back and you tell me what you find out.
Yeah. Well, if you want to really find out, just write your U.S. senator and ask him what kind of clubs they're in, like try to let them. They'll send you paperwork back. No problem. They're all happy with it. Dad Evans is a good one world there.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote him, and he sent me the whole package back, and he just read it.
The gentleman mentioned the Trilateral Commission. There's also the Council on Foreign Relations. This is their foreign affairs journal, where they write their scholarly articles, supposedly scholarly articles. It's the Journal of the Council of Foreign Relations. And they debate issues. But the debate is not, should America remain sovereign and free, or should America move towards a one-world government? The whole debate is limited to, how should we move towards a one-world government? And there's a really neat quote in here by Anne Marie Slaughter, a very appropriate name for a globalist. She states this, and it's one little brief quote: the result is not world government, But global governance, you know, does she think we're really dumbed down to that extent? Where we don't see that world government and global governance are two different titles of the same thing? Well, she's basically saying is, you know, don't say world government. It freaks people out. Just say global governance will accomplish the same thing, and they'll applaud us as we come to power. But Council of Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the list of these organizations goes on. And believe me, there are people in positions of power in both parties that have this stuff all over them. It's really getting ugly right now. And in America, in most cases, we get the opportunity to vote in the globalist of our choice. I'm not saying don't vote, but check out the people you vote for, because just because there's an R after somebody's name does not necessarily mean he's a good guy. And there are people who are very moral and really believe that the United Nations is going to solve all their problems. And it's a bad choice. Here's an article from June 1997, Computer Source Magazine. It's written by William Van Winkle. I hope that wasn't his real name, but maybe it is. But it says, Strange Horizons Under Your Skin. And this is how he starts this article. This is a Computer Source Magazine. This isn't a guy who studies end time prophecies, or it's not a political name. He's studying computer technology, okay? And he says this, a man sits in a holding cell, deciding he is the last human without an implant. That network chip wired into his brain's base. He cannot exist in virtual space nor conduct any financial transactions. He has no history except in his primitive natural mind and no social identity. In short, he cannot function with the rest of his species, and he must either adapt, accepting the government's implant offer, or die. He feels himself torn and cannot choose, even when he hears the approaching footsteps. Then he goes back further. Later on in this article, he says, the proposition of bringing computers into the human body is no longer fantasy, but fact. Okay? He says, people I've surveyed seem unanimously averse to accepting a computer into their bodies. But acceptance is a slow, reluctant process. It begins with medical benefits such as those above. Next month, we'll explore a different option. Would you be willing to implant all your ID and your money under your skin? Developments are afoot that may not only intrigue, but persuade you. Again, this guy's not arguing against it. He's saying a microchip implant. We've got the technology. Why not use it? We can solve so many of the world's problems. I mean, you could be out jogging, go into diabetic shock, fall down, they rush you to the hospital, they check your microchip to find out you're a diabetic. And that could save your life. So, I mean, there's lots of good that could come out of that. So we ought to head in that direction. That's what people like Van Winkle are telling us. Time Magazine. Time Magazine. This was, what is the edition on this? April 27th, 1998. And it's Time Magazine, The Future of Money, and they said it down here, are banks really necessary? And in this article, they say that you can take a single electronic card, might replace everything in your wallet, your cash, and they talk about the future of cashless society, and that the convenience of digital money is compelling. Your credit cards, your ATM card, your ID cards. Then they throw in the statement, non-conspiracists could consolidate pertinent info in one place. So basically, if anybody believes that people are conspiring to form a one world government, they obviously wouldn't be included in this group. So these guys are drawing lines in the sand. Your insurance could be included, then it says, and your life. And then it says at the end, one card or one chip with your life on it. Okay? One little sentence from this article from Time magazine says, your daughter can store the money any way she wants, on her laptop, on a debit card, even in the not too distant future, on a chip implanted under her skin. Now, what would the author of this article say if he heard me giving this talk today? He'd say, well, this guy's a nut. This guy is an idiot talking about the Antichrist and all this other stuff. So it's when Christians and freedom lovers talk about a coming one world government and the mark of the beast and a microchip implant under the skin, we're nuts. But when the guys who want this stuff to come down talk about it, they're brilliant. And they're just telling it like it is. So it's kind of like, what's wrong with this picture? Now the New American, don't confuse the New American with the New Republic, okay? The New American is pro-America, pro-Constitution magazine. The New Republic is, might as well be, Gorbachev might as well be the editor of that magazine. But in the New American, they interviewed Malachi Martin in an article called The Catholic Church in Crisis. Malachi Martin, he just died a few years ago, but he was a Roman Catholic priest, became an exorcist later in life. But he was a Vatican insider for years, okay? And so he wrote a novel called Windswept House, where he argued, and by the way, Pope John Paul II agrees with him, that the present College of Cardinals, the cardinals that will elect the next pope after this pope dies, are basically New Age, if not even Satanist, but they are at the very least New Age, pro-abortion, pro-homosexual rights, and pro-New World Order, pro-One World Government, okay? Even John Paul II agrees with Malachi Martin that the next pope is going to be what they refer to as an anti-pope, which is about as close of a term as Roman Catholicism comes to the Christian term antichrist. Okay, but basically, Malachi Martin admitted that his Windswept House is based on what is really going on in Vatican circles. He even claims that Pope John Paul I, who lasted, I think, a whopping 30 days as the Pope and then mysteriously died in the middle of the night when somebody gave him supposedly a glass of water, but he even claims that Pope John Paul I died when he opened an envelope revealing the satanic ritual that many of these cardinals had taken part in, which would supposedly bring in a Luciferian order into Roman Catholicism. Now, let me say this. There are many Protestant denominations that are further away from the Bible than even Roman Catholicism is today. I used to be Roman Catholic. I left after being saved for 2 years. I just saw that there's just so many contradictions between Roman Catholicism and the Bible. So I chose the Bible. Then enrolled in Liberty University, Jerry Falwell School. So I got about as far away from Catholicism as you could get. And at the same time, there are Protestants. This is not like a thumbs up for Protestants. Yeah, the New World Order wants to use the Roman Catholic Church. You have some Protestant denominations that are just straight out New Age. And worship the earth goddess, Gaia, worship Sophia, the goddess of wisdom, rather than worshiping the God of the Bible. The fact of the matter is we Protestants do not, we're so divided, we do not have the unity or the structure that Roman Catholicism has, the worldwide structure. So that's what the one worlders want. They want that a one world religion as they unify the economy of the world, the military power of the world, and the political power of the world. They also need a unified world religion. And Roman Catholicism does supply them with that worldwide structure. And then when you can throw your guy in there and say, hey, and by the way, he's infallible, and he's got a whole college of cardinals, or at least the most powerful members of the college of cardinals that back him, you have the nations. You remember the Rome mentioned as the city of seven hills with a woman, the end time false religion, basically is based out of Rome. That could be the connection there. Okay? But whatever the case, the selection of this next poll could reveal a lot. I mentioned that the theosophical, theosophy brought the New Age movement to America. If you look at this yellow sheet, the Theosophical Society was founded by Helena Blavatsky in 1875. And she had three goals: to produce the universal brotherhood, by that what she meant was to unite all mankind in a one world government, the unity of religion, she wanted a one world religion, and she wanted to tap into the spiritual powers within man, cultic, demonic powers. She promoted spiritism and seances, communicating with the, supposedly the spirits of the dead, Hindu philosophy, in the United States. This led to the current revival of ancient occultism in the United States, now known as the New Age movement. She claimed that the world awaits many avatars, many manifestations of God who reveal truth to the world. She believed Jesus was one of these avatars, as well as Buddha, Muhammad, the list goes on and on and on. Annie Besant led the Theosophical Society after Helena Blavatsky. Alice Bailey, after her, was another key member of the Theosophical Society who communicated with spirit guides. And Bailey's books are very popular in New Age circles today, although Blavatsky's books are now becoming popular as well. Lucius Truss is the name of their publishing company. It used to be called Lucifer Publishing Company. But the sales were really down in the States, so we changed it to Lucius Trust. But it just, it just serves as a reminder. They believe that Lucifer's lie in the garden, that ye shall be as gods, is the truth that sets us free. And when they talk about Lucifer, they, Lucifer means the morning star, the star of the morning. It means the enlightened one, okay? And they still speak of Lucifer in those pre-fall terms. Now, the common New Age beliefs, I think that the Theosophical Society, it is in powerful places in the United Nations. It is probably the theosophical type of neo-paganism or New Age religion is pretty much the religion of the United Nations, and this could very well become the end-time one-world religion. Common New Age beliefs, pantheism, instead of God creating the universe, God is the universe. And God is not a personal God who loves us. God is an impersonal force. God is like electricity, okay? It's Star Wars and the Force be with you, not the Bible and the Lord be with you. Okay, Lucas knew what he was doing when he made Star Wars. It was his attempt to evangelize America with Eastern thought, you know, with Hindu type thought. And he, you know, he admits it. I'm not saying don't watch Star Wars, but when you watch Star Wars, you test it with the Bible, as you would when you watch anything else. And when you hear him preach, you should test it with the Bible. Hopefully, I'm doing a better job than Lucas. They believe in self-deification, that man is God, okay? Reincarnation, where the soul passes through the cycle of death and rebirth, the soul is incarnated in many different bodies. Illusionism, that the physical world is an illusion. Relativism, there's no absolute truth. What's wrong with the statement, there is no absolute truth? Well, the only way it could be true is if it's an absolute truth. But then it's automatically false because it refutes itself. It's a self-refuting statement. They also believe there's no absolute moral laws, no universal rights and wrongs. The problem with that, of course, is because of that belief, they always tell you, they say, Fernandez, there's no such thing as wrong, so you Christians are wrong when you call my actions wrong. No, if there's no such thing as wrong, Phil Fernandez is never wrong, so get off my case, leave me alone. And so, you know, if there is no such thing as right and wrong, then they should not condemn those who make moral value judgments. You know, once you say there's no such thing as right and wrong, you should remove yourself from making any moral value judgments yourself, but they don't do that.